It has been a long process, but it's been a very thorough, transparent and robust process. And I think both sides, there's a great deal of respect amongst both sides. But what we've tried really to do is to sort of recognise the players as partners within the game. And the RFU have absolutely done that, as they have with the clubs, and really benchmark about levels of income on the sort of club deal. So I think we were... we were confident. It's the first time we've probably gone into one of those negotiations when England are unbeaten for a long period, and that certainly helped. But I think the players also need to take great credit for the way not only they've conducted themselves, but also behind the scenes. We had some really strong leadership from key people in the squad, and that helped give us the direction. But ultimately, yeah, obviously delighted to have got it done. I mean, I think it's interesting because people always dwell on the number and what they get per test, and then there's a lot of comparative data against other rugby playing nations, but we're very fortunate we play in a very strong commercial marketplace. The players generate huge amounts of money for the game across the piece, encourage participation and the like, but particularly on the back of what's been a brilliant year. So I think in the context of the revenues that are being generated through English rugby, it's a very reasonable deal, a fair deal. And given that you know, we see the sort of attrition and the career span of international players coming down. It's a good deal for everyone all round.
Going back sort of 15, 20 years, that even more, the concern amongst elite players was that the RFU was generating all this cash out of match days, commercial, corporate, and the like, and they weren't seeing a fair slice of the pie. Do you think then, from a player's point of view, we are getting to the point where a player is getting his due reward for what the RFU is reaping on match day?
Yeah, and that was very much an objective for this whole program, is that we wanted to ensure that the players felt that they were participating in the sort of commercial upside of the RFU. And obviously we've seen, despite a disappointing World Cup for everyone, we've seen a fantastic year around English rugby revenues. So that was very much a key theme, and trying to simplify that as much as possible so that players can see that there's a distinct revenue line that directly impacts on them. And obviously the success on the field has a huge part to play within that.
Damien, if you go back to when you set up the RPA to what is happening now in terms of what the money players are making, do you see the point of view that rugby is now moving into a sphere more into that kind of football area than it traditionally has been when it was an amateur sport? But the old traditions of rugby, we're moving further and further away from when we talk about those kind of numbers that the players are making.
I think we've worked as a game really hard on this values piece, and you know, we've certainly had a few sessions at the players' board that meets quarterly from our perspective to talk about values of the game and respecting officials and trying to ensure that behaviours don't get eroded. But I certainly think when you're talking about numbers that are substantial, and you think the England players in 2003 won, from memory, £70,000 each to win the World Cup, and now the players in this Old Mutual World Series will pick up more than that to play in four games for England. It's an organic growth and evolution over that period. And I think that the question we always sort of ask is, is rugby going down the football route? Are the agents becoming too powerful? Will the players just become mercenaries? And I think, by and large, going round the clubs, rugby is very fortunate, because I think if you behave in a way that is unbecoming to a sort of club ethos and culture, you soon find out about it via an errant boot in training or just a general...
You think that's still there, that kind of boot room culture?
I do think it is there, and I think players keep themselves very honest. And even though the levels of money are going up, I think the better teams at club level have really strong cultures that are defined around players putting in a shift for each other. And even at the World Rugby Awards last night, the message that came through time and time again from New Zealand, who mopped up all the main awards, was, we're just a group of young men trying to get better every day and working for each other. And I think that's still very much part of the rugby ethos.
Mm. Obviously, the numbers are approximate, but if we add up what a top player is going to make at his club, add together 12, 13 England appearances, bonuses, commercial deals, sponsorship, we could be looking at an England rugby player clearing £1 million a year. Do you think players deserve that kind of money?
Well, I think the marketplace dictates what they deserve. And I think if players are successful and conduct themselves in a way that is becoming to that sort of role model status, I think they do deserve it. Because I think careers are short. They will probably get shorter at the sort of top end. And I think you've just got to look at the tracking of the revenues that have come into the English game. And obviously everyone looks at England and France as the two sort of commercial powerhouses. And already we're hearing lots of problems that are happening around the world, around other unions and their own financial positions. But I think with England and France being so strong, you know, you don't begrudge any player. I see a lot of former players, in fact, I saw a few at the weekend who were bemoaning the fact that you know, they've hung up their boots, but you know, that's the way it is now. And I think we just have to, as a union, be very careful, I think, to your previous point, not to ensure that this situation comes about 45 players in the elite player squad. You know, we as an English game want England to be the best place to play rugby in the world. And I think I use the sum of the parts argument, so the club salary or England salary, but also a lot of the stuff that we do as a game off the field, the holistic support of clubs, strength and conditioning, personal development program, looking after players, I think then makes the perhaps the French market, which is probably more financially stable or financially attractive, people would start thinking twice about going to France, because they recognise what we're doing through the Players Association, the RFU and the clubs around off-field activity and direction and leadership.